Thank you for listening to the Print and Packaging Lab powered by PIA Mid-America. We are a regional trade association focused on helping print and packaging companies grow, connect, and succeed. This deep dive, More Than a Paycheck, explores how workforce expectations, compensation, and employee retention are evolving across the print and packaging industry. This recording focused on workforce strategy, compensation trends, and leadership conversations within print and packaging is part of the Wage and Benefits Education Initiative provided by America's Printing Association Network. The 2026 Wage and Benefits Survey and Reports are supported by Significance Automation. Interested in learning more or participating in this year's survey? Contact your local print association leader for additional information.
Teresa, tell me about your role with the Wage and Benefits Survey and your connection to America's Printing Association Network.
Excellent. So our organization is a group of sister associations nationwide that have nearly 5,000 members of printing service providers across the country. And together, we work to develop and produce a wage and benefit survey, reports, a portal, and compensation tools to help those members nationwide. So input is coming from across the country, and I have the privilege of being the program director for Wage and Benefit. So I really am tasked with gathering that information and being able to disseminate it, come up with the averages, and get those reports back out to those sister associations for their members.
That's great. It's such a great project. And the data that comes in, I know, is from the printing companies and the production houses that are throughout the nation. And that is such a good place to note, because it's not from a manufacturing segment. It's from people running presses, working in pre-press, working in the bindery, working in the front offices, in the ecosystem that is the print industry, right?
Absolutely. It is specifically for the printing industry. And we see a lot of differences between what is considered general manufacturing. This is not automotive. You can't use general manufacturing and compare it to the printing industry. It is custom manufacturing. It is not the same as just what you can find in general on the internet. It's very specific to our industry. So over 200 positions, operators running two color machines or four up machines, or you name it. It's very specific.
What are you hearing from members right now?
There has been a change in mindset, and I would estimate that it started really kind of around COVID. We're at a crucial point where our workers are really looking for a home, an organization where they fit, someone who is not only going to let them make a contribution for what matters, but also help them with a plan for their career. They're looking for, where are the next steps? If I'm in this position, but I want to get to there, can you help me do that with education and training? And it has very much evolved. And that's a good thing.
Well, and I think our industry in particular itself to upward mobility within an organization, and not just lateral moves or moves that might be a level higher across different companies to extend your knowledge and your career, your compensation packages, et cetera, because you're learning on the job and then moving into more into roles that are essentially promotions, right?
Absolutely. And that opportunity within our industry is sometimes much greater. We have an advantage over some of those more corporate structured, larger general manufacturing. However, we could do better at our plans, the stepping stones of how to get there. We're not always great at communicating that or making it clear that we have those employees' best interest at heart in going that direction. But goodness, the culture that our industry brings and provides is so much more family friendly. Mm-hmm. That our industry really treats them as family, and you don't get that, you're just another number feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. Feels like so many owners are balancing taking care of employees who have become, in essence, family, or at least in their minds, a responsibility, like a family, where they're invested in their kids and they're being And I think that's juxtaposed to them protecting the health of the business, not just profits, but the health of the business. Because as we know, this year has been challenging from a consumables standpoint of pricing.
Absolutely. Certainly, what's happening in society is we have increased costs related to fuel surcharges and energy. And those are things that often are being passed on in raw materials to our print service providers. And so the business owner is challenged with how do I make sure that we're still profitable and we're not losing business, but I have to increase my costs and at the same time take care of my people. And so definitely staffing is one of the most expensive costs on our P&L. However, the printing industry, my goodness, invests a lot in their people.
I think the conversation that we're having today really hits home that compensation isn't just on a single spreadsheet anymore. It's a holistic look. And how do you continue to provide clarity and transparency and help foster morale and culture and retention and recruiting all at the same time? I can only imagine what goes through HR leaders' heads at nights.
Are absolutely right. It has evolved to the place where culture is a big part of planning for increases and benefits. It's not just numbers on a spreadsheet. We're talking about our work family members. We're talking about human beings, and we're talking about things that interest and motivate them outside of just the dollars. Dollars are important. We need to be able to afford our household expenses. However, far and wide, culture is much, much more valuable. People would say, I would take a little less money if I'm valued, if I'm contributing, if I'm a part of a bigger solution, if I'm making a difference over just the take-home pay and I just show up and I'm just another number.
Yeah, right. And that take-home number is just one avenue to the compensation package. Like, I don't feel like employees at any point or company leaders should look at I pay XYZ for XYZ position, but rather this is the pay, and then here are the additional benefits. Time off, sick leave. I'm trying to think about all the things that are in that survey that are measured.
Absolutely. Flexibility, all of those things, which our industry has historically been very giving with. What we haven't done well has been transparent in saying it. So you may have another industry trying to recruit away an operator that says, we'll pay you 50 cents more an hour or a dollar more an hour and can do better at communicating all of our benefits. I would love to see our members saying, here's your wages, but here's how much we pay for insurance, whether it be health or disability or name it, and guide them and educate them on the you losing if you were to leave. We want you here and that you're gonna spend that 50 cents or dollar an hour on the cost of gas and the wear and tear on your vehicle.
Working is not just about the pay and the compensation packages, but also the experiences you have. I mean, you're spending half of your waking hours, presumably, or maybe more, working each week. And it says a lot to want to go there and be valued and be happy and come home and not be sad that you spent all day in an environment that you hate.
Right. No, I would say it's very much a generational change. Our workers today, our young people coming into the industry, want to be open and talk about it. They want it to be on the table. They want it to be transparent. But historically, from a baby boomer generation, those were kind of taboo topics. We didn't talk about how you feel about your job.
Right. And I think that's where having tools available to us, like compensation spreadsheets that help you define clear and transparent wages for people, and the survey that we have in the report, of course, really come into play because you're right. It's no longer a taboo topic. People are talking about not only their experience at work, but also what they're getting paid, et cetera. And nobody can prevent that conversation.
Absolutely, really to the point where it's illegal to encourage them not to talk about it. They have the rights to talk about it, and saying they can't is against the law. And so we want them to build cultures that are desirable and then encourage them to talk about it. I want to like the people that I work with. I want to like the job that I do, and I have no problem saying that, even though it is still a job. And there are times that we have to do things that I don't prefer that particular task today, but I know that it has to get done. And that's a huge advantage to this custom manufacturing because you're not just putting the same windshield on the same vehicle day after day after day. You get to work on a brochure and then labels and then a campaign and a whole variety of products, large format mixed in with sheet printing or roll printing, and it becomes an interesting project.
Yeah, you're exposed to not just a trifold brochure, but sometimes you're exposed to incredible art that somebody has created for a marketing piece, but it kind of touches your soul when you touch it and feel it and experience the print. So, good point. Talk a little bit about reactive and intentional compensation. I think sometimes we get into a panicked mode, and I think we've really seen this over the last 3 years. It's slowing a little bit, where you need somebody to come in and work, and you're happy to have the body with 1 or 2 years of experience, but man, they're also wanting a salary or compensation of 10 years of experience. And so, how do organizations balance that? How do they not panic and not overreact, but come in measured?
That with tools. We do it with strategy. That is really what the wage and benefit program is all about. This particular product, not only wages, but all sorts of benefit statistics that are being shared. And it is seeing that data. We are in a data-driven society today that really says, let's take what we have and understand that our people are the backbone of our organization. And we need to think about all of them, not just the ones that we're trying to bring in right now and what we have to pay them, but how would it make a tenured employee feel knowing that someone new without experience could potentially be making more? That's where we come up with the plan. With a strategy that says, wow, this project has a compensation tool that teaches them how to track their position for that individual. So, say we have multiple operators, track when they were hired, tracked when their last increase was, track what their experience is, and then compare it to what the rest of the country is doing in their area. For that size of company, so that we can really feel confident that we are providing a fair and equitable solution for our workers and be able to speak about it confidently, not just have that knee-jerk reaction that, oh my gosh, I'm going to lose this person. I'm going to have to overcompensate them. And then the others aren't as compensated as much. And we get into this issue of equality.
Yeah, one of the things we've been chatting about in our organization is that steady middle. That group of employees who have some tenure, they show up every day, they're reliable. They're the ones who will take on a little extra burden. They're the ones that are raising the flag when they see something wrong. But they've been there for 5, 6, 10, 15 years. And while there's been some raises over time, maybe they've gotten their annual 3% each year for several years, but compensation is different now. And the value that those newer employees are coming in at is lower. And you want to be fair and keep that in mind. I think the question here is, how do you evaluate somebody who's that steady middle, who maybe has been using their association's online tools and improving themselves? And how do you give them a well-deserved bump? Because they deserve it.
Right. We measure it and we track that information and we become more comfortable with transparency. When we have data, we can say, here's when you were hired. You indicated that you wanted to grow into another position. We suggested that you take these print university classes from our sister associations, the APAN group. You completed all of them that we assigned to you, and that's an influence on where you go from here. And so now you have the knowledge or the training to be able to give them a promotion or move them into a senior position and to really look at that of where they're going. They're not going to want to stay in that position potentially for the rest of their life. Some are at the top of their range and they're comfortable and they want to stay there, but we can't ignore the ones that want to move and we need to be clear about their tenure, What the salary range is for that position, that we've clearly defined it. And when they've reached the top of that scale, that the next step is a promotion or another position where they have the opportunity to make more money so that they don't feel stagnant. At the end of the day, everybody wants to be valued and respected.
And I think we need to caution in some of the language here, and it's really nuanced, right? But a promotion may not be available because the firm is 20 employees. They have two CSRs. That is their title. One of them, excuse me, one of them came in as a new hire, new to the industry. Their title was CSR then. 10 years down the road, they have all this experience and they're still a CSR. But I think internally, HR can code them differently and justify the raise.
Definitely with the tenure. And when we compare to them to others, and when you look at the data from the benefit study, positions like customer service rep one or customer service rep two, and then it's defined in that job description to say, here's how much experience they brought to be in a customer service rep two. And they don't necessarily have to change their title, but they're measuring it accurately. We really say with an intentional workforce strategy, you're comfortable and confident with the increase that you're providing to that person because you have the data and you're tracking it.
And that data really helps to reduce emotional decision making.
Absolutely.
I want to go back to the wage and benefits survey. It launches this summer on June 1st. How does participation improve the value of the survey?
Oh, tenfold, Janie. I would say the more participation we have, the better the average is, and we can really get down to those specific numbers and trust that they are correct. So I want to say it is extremely important that everyone realizes that we have a very secure portal and that the information they enter is protected and is not available from an individual company standpoint to anybody.
Right.
Occasionally, you'll see a star that says not enough data provided or gathered to report on. And that's unfortunate because the more we have, the better that we do. And if we have dozens of submissions for a particular position, that average just gets better and better and better. With that said, that portal is super easy to use. We
Right.
would say it takes 20, maybe 30 minutes the first time you do it, but then it's storing your information so you can recall it the next year and just update it and not have to start over. And that gives us kind of that year-over-year trend technology to be able to say, oh, wow, look at the differences here, or look at the differences in regions.
Yeah.
We have some pretty significant differences from California to New Jersey. Those are some,
Right.
particularly when it relates to wages or benefits. Healthcare is very different in the Northeast than it is in the Southwest.
Right. Yeah. From an association standpoint, often dig into these reports to help education happen, to help here in the state of Texas have the TEA. Approve CTE programs, career and technical education programs for print. And one of the things they're looking at is a living wage available? So it's super critical from a workforce development standpoint that the community comes together and participates.
Absolutely. It is, again, I use the word crucial, where our industry needs to know that this data from this report is being used with our advocacy efforts to help influence state and local government, as well as the federal government. We are working with the Department of Labor to say we have the data and the statistics that show this industry provides a fair living wage and that they should promote it, and individuals should consider this as a career choice.
Yeah, absolutely. We have the reports, and there's a whole range of numbers that are in there for each position, all the way from your low to your P90 to your median to your average. Can you talk a little bit about what each line and each subset there is seeing and what our reports are showing?
So valuable. Those reports, both for wages and benefits, is measuring from the minimum to the average to the median, all the way to the top, or the 90 percentile. That's really important when we compare small businesses to large corporations, because they may be able to pay slightly more, but are we showing them the value in the benefits? So the front half of the report is broken down by region. The back half of the report is broken down by company size. And so you can really drill down and be able to say, okay, well, we are a company with less than 25 employees, but we are in the southeast part of the country. And how do we compare? Or now we have somebody that's coming from the southwest and they're expecting a particular wage, but the cost of living is different here. And I actually have data that can support that. With that, they also have the ability, the participants, to go online and drill down even further than the reports with an online portal that has search criteria to be able to say, okay, well, I'm just really focused on the wide format industry. That's different than commercial print. And how do we compare wages from one segment to the other? I can't put that all in a PDF, but I can make it available for the specifics of we want to be able to drill down and say, okay, let's just look at the last 2 years, or let's look at the last 4 years. Let's look at this industry segment or this part of the country. All of that is available.
And being able to see how those wages evolve over the years, I think is really important to building that strategy. If you're seeing an operator spiking, between 2023 and 2024 or five or six, wherever we stand, it might be saying something about the talent pool that's available. It might be saying something about the complexity of the work. I know that in another conversation we had about workforce, talked about the operators or technicians now needing to not just know how to put the page in and calibrate the inks, but have a little bit of an IT background too, just to be able to do some of the programming, and that affects your wage.
Right. That's a really terrific point. So we will generate an executive summary based on the information that we found from this year's survey compared to the last few years surveys. And it's really interesting to take a look at those trends and say, we really saw the wages for a five or six color 40 inch plus litho operator on an offset press climb, climb, climb. And it took a very talented skill set to be able to be a lead pressman on one of those machines. However, those individuals are starting to retire. And believe it or not, some of those wages are starting to come down slightly for a couple of reasons. The next generation is younger, hired in. They don't have the skill set, so they are being paid slightly less because of their experience. But then the technology is taking over on some of those areas as well. And we're automating and putting steps in where that newer, younger generation that didn't have that trade background, that skill set to run a press, doesn't have to know or see all of those things. And then looking at those trends is interesting.
Right, right. And it's looking at our earlier example, the CSR 1, 2, or 3. I think it applies to the press room too. You've got your helper that starts out and your lead pressman who's got 30 years of incredible experience that's now aging out. And so the person who's now taking over that lead pressman's position might have 10 years. And so the ramp to get up to where the 30-year experience is there for wages to grow.
Right, right, right. And the technology gets better and better and better every day. We now have sophisticated dashboards and have for some time to control ink density across the sheet. They are not up there on the press turning ink keys to open and close by hand any longer. And that's just one example on a sophisticated offset press. But when you think of the digital side, that too is becoming easier. Somebody being able to produce a booklet start to finish off a machine that has a finishing capability makes it faster and easier than having to take that to the cutter and then the cutter take it to the stitcher and then the stitcher have a 3-knife trimmer to do all of those steps. There are still very sophisticated projects that need all of that, but the technology is helping us to automate and helping us to bring down the amount of tenure that they need to run those machines.
Right. Excellent point. We probably have some working leaders listening to this podcast today or interested in the wage and benefit report and survey and what we're talking about. And they're probably feeling a little overwhelmed when we say, you need to build a strategy. You need to have clarity. You need to have transparency. I can only imagine that their focus right now is just getting work out the door. Say to them about that. How
I
do
say
we navigate
we are
it?
Yeah, we are here to help you and the tools have been built. And so we want you to use them. We want you to train We want to train you and provide the compensation tools so that you don't have to build it from scratch, and that know that you have a support team behind you to help have those conversations, to coach your team, to let them know that you want a healthy staff, and you want them to know that you're making informed decisions based off of industry data, based off of statistics that say we have thought this through, and our leadership is committed to our staff and the tools and support are there. We are here to help.
Great point. And that intention is so important in leadership. I think employees see it. They see it when it's off the cuff, and maybe if they've all been talking to each other or just outside industry talk, they see when things aren't fair, and they see when things are decided because that's how someone reacted. And so being able to come back and have that intention to say, this is what, why, and how our compensation works, I think is really powerful for retention and for recruitment.
Absolutely. What it does is it then empowers our employees to feel like they can trust leadership. They can know that they have their best interest at heart, that they're not overlooking or ignoring or didn't recognize it. When we're transparent and say we took all of these things into consideration, we build confidence with those individuals. And then they come to value that do have their best interest at heart.
Yeah, it's really about building that sustainable workplace and a stronger business, right?
Absolutely.
Teresa, any closing words or thoughts that you want to share on compensation and that today?
So, industry professionals that are going to listen to this podcast, we may have the opportunity to use it not only to help them to know, see, and understand, but to share information about the incredible opportunities that this industry has to offer. More and more young people to get into it, and a lot of them don't know about it because we primarily are a B2B industry, but wow, the opportunity in this industry for custom manufacturing compared to more static manufacturing is interesting. It's fun. It gives them the opportunity to learn and to have value to say, I contributed to this project when they see it out there in the market. I helped to color correct the photograph on these images for packaging in the freezer section at the grocery store. And I understand what that means. That's valuable. People want to do that interesting work. And that's different than general manufacturing.
I think that's a really great point. And part of, I think, a lot of print industry professionals' narrative is that print is alive, well, thriving, and evolving. And we often in our organization, when we meet people outside of the industry, say, imagine you're in the middle of the grocery store and there's no print.
Right, we have nothing. We have no tags, we have no labels, we have no nutritional facts, we have no QR codes, we have no pharmaceutical boxes with instructions. Just imagine how boring a world we would have if print weren't alive and thriving.
Thank you so much for your time today, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening. If you are interested in participating in the 2026 Wage and Benefits Survey or learning more about the reports and benchmarking tools available through America's Printing Association Network, please contact your local print association leader for more information. We hope you enjoyed listening to the Print and Packaging Lab podcast powered by PIA Mid-America. Contact us to learn more about membership and for access to this and other content made for the printing and packaging industry. Get in touch by emailing us at info@piamidam.org.